Good evening. Welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine. I'm your mad scientist host, Wally, and with me in the studio is a fellow mad scientist, PG Leish.
Hey.
That's the man. We got some, yep. He got his own theme song there. So PJ, he's got the code name Cheese Beetle. Has another code name already. You know, he's a legit mad scientist. So on the Insta, he is at Wisconsin Bug Guy, all spelled out. It's like 16 characters. I don't know. He is the director of the Insect Diagnostic Lab with the University of Wisconsin Department of Entomology. His work spans the whole state, from tracking the emergence and spread of invasive species to helping folks ID backyard caterpillars to giving you advice on how to prevent bed bugs. So stay tuned. Cheese Beetle here is a dad and a real son of Wisconsin, and he looks like a geeky version of Charlie Burns. So yeah, that's right, ladies. Get on the internet. Look him up. Accent is real. Welcome, PJ.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So this is not your first time on the Muddy. You're a frequent flyer here, but back in the studio and a couple times in a year. So that's good to hear. And we're colleagues at the university, and it's always a pleasure to get to chat with you and learn about insects, as it were. What got you, like, what bit you, as it were, for studying insects in the first place?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's really kind of a long story, and
we got 30 minutes, so go ahead.
So growing up, I grew up in Racine County in a rural area, shared a large yard with a farm next door. So we had a pond in our yard, was always catching frogs, toads, salamanders, that sort of thing.
Those aren't insects, though.
They're not.
But they catch insects.
They do. But we also had across the street this exotic animal farm. So like I would open my bedroom window and see camels or zebras or things like that, and hearing lions roar. So I grew up like loving animals.
Mm.
And my dad was a science teacher, a tech ed teacher. And so I had this interest in science and got into high school, really fell in love with biology, had a great high school biology teacher. Went on when I started my undergrad, I knew from day one, like biology major. I know there's numbers of how many times folks will change their major. And me, it was biology.
None more majors.
And then partway through, I was wrapping up my sophomore year, and I got linked up with an entomologist here at UW-Madison, Dr. Chris Williamson.
Okay.
And this was back in 2005, and he had
the
funding.
The distant past.
Yeah, I know, 20 years ago already. He had some funding to do some survey work to look for the invasive emerald ash borer, which was not here in the state yet that we knew about.
Oh, wow.
But I did some initial surveying in like southeastern Wisconsin and a few other spots. That, I tell folks, was my gateway bug. That got my foot in the door.
First bug's free.
Exactly. And Chris asked if I was interested in going on for graduate work. And I said, sure. I have no idea what that quite entails.
I like school. It's all I know how to do. Let's do it.
Exactly. Moved to Madison in summer of 2007, and I've been here ever since.
And you did Parkland undergraduate, right?
UW Parkside.
Parkside.
Yeah.
Which is down there in that beautiful part of the state by the Great, Great Lake. So you're telling me that you're like a prodigy mad scientist, like your dad was a tech ed mad scientist, and like he taught you how to be a mad scientist. This is the legacy information that people need. And don't forget, fans of this fine Notion machine, that you too should be that cool science teacher. If you get a chance, maybe do outdoor ed, maybe eighth grade science, you know, go blow up some hydrogen balloons, like have a good time. I have a similar love of biology. I also have a degree in biology, and it was us like getting to look at brains in a jar and stuffed owls. You know, we had a beehive at our school. So I was also raised to be a mad scientist, I feel like, which I'm proud to share my knowledge and friendship with the fellow mad scientists, as we do once a month here on this fine show. So what do you do in your science lab? What kind of What kind of terrible experiments? What kind of specimens are you creating?
Not really creating specimens, but my job in a nutshell, I tell folks in very basic terms, is I get paid to identify bugs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, and as simple as you can phrase it, but I run the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. So mm-hmm. I am performing diagnostics, helping identify insects-related arthropods, so spiders, ticks, mites, centipedes, millipedes, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I identify those. And then I've really come to learn and appreciate over the years, the main thing that I do know is not only identifying those, but providing context.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean if you find that given insect or creature in that given spot? If
Got
it's
you.
A new invasive species, like that means something. That's really important.
Right.
If it's sometimes, you know, the squeaky wheel gets you all, it's a pest. But mm-hmm. is this a minor pest that all you need to do is vacuum it up or mm-hmm. catch it and stick it outside and that's the end of it? Or is it something like bed bugs or something else that you really need to intervene with kind of a heavy hammer to deal with? So providing that context mm-hmm. is a huge thing that I do. I also do a lot of education, outreach just related to insects and entomology, and do a lot of media engagement as well.
And here you are on the actual live radio, thrashing the ether as we do. That's awesome. Yeah. And I have a similar thing where I just get fun questions from concerned citizens and they're like, what is this? What do I do? And you're like, well, you tell them what to do. And we recently worked on some fact sheets together to get the word out for folks. We'll get into the spotted lanternfly a little bit later on. But so of course, every superhero has to have a nemesis. So like, what is your nemesis bug besides mosquito? Cause that was taken earlier.
Yeah, I mean, no one really likes mosquitoes.
Bats do, but...
Well, yeah, bats do. Humans-wise, you know, can't really think anyone that loves mosquitoes. I have colleagues that do a lot of research on mosquitoes, and they're
crazy. They're like alien look. If you look at their proboscises, whew.
Yeah, I mean, it's really intricate what they do. That proboscis, that mouth part, it's actually made up of about 6 different pieces. You'd have to really see it under magnification to see that, but they each have very specialized function. But... Nemesis. This one's going to sound a little bit weird.
You never know.
But May June beetles or June bugs.
Oh, because you like to bike.
Well,
kapow!
Yeah. So I did my master's degree studying June bugs. And one part of my experiment was trying to control the larvae of these in an agricultural setting in northern Wisconsin. And I had to do part of my experiments around sundown or after dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm out there, it's late May, I've got a headlamp on, and
swarmed by
exactly.
things.
Exactly, and there's something about that low frequency noise when they go by your, it makes me wanna just flop to the ground right away. Exactly, and so the first year doing my field work, I mean, every 5 seconds, going by my ear, that was definitely anxiety inducing. And the second year I smartened up, I brought a raincoat mm-hmm. and had headphones on, so I couldn't hear them whatsoever.
Really,
I smartened up, but you know, they're totally harmless, but golly jeepers, I mean, that was quite the experience doing those nighttime experiments.
You heard it here, guys. Golly jeepers, those June bugs up for mayor, I guess, too, huh? Yeah, I, as a person who likes to mountain bike and bike at night, have been smacked real, real strong in the face by them, and they don't mean no harm. But you know, velocity is a task mistress, I tell you. I have an off the script question here because I do have a script friends, but why do bugs go to light like that? I think I know, but I'd like to hear you explain it to me.
Yeah, so that's a question that folks have had, you know, for all of eternity. Mostly, mm-hmm. you know, why are these insects going to fire, lights, and things like that? And there's been kind of various ideas thrown out there related to navigation, or are they just getting confused? And just in the last year or two, there was a paper published on this mm-hmm. topic that finally has really kind of shined some light on it, for lack of a better term there. But what they used was some very specialized cameras where they could take slow motion video and look mm-hmm. at frame by frame what's going on, and then use computers to really, you know, keep track of all those little details, which mm-hmm. for you and I to sit there and watch a video and do, it wouldn't be feasible.
Mm.
And what they found in these video clips is they were watching like moths and other insects. the insects are basically trying to turn and keep their back to it. So it's kind of to do with navigation.
Right.
And if you think about it at night, if an insect is flying along, they've got a natural light source, the moon.
Right.
And in relation to the moon, if you keep your backside to it, you're going to be keeping, you know, kind of level, flying in a straight line.
You'd be mooning it, right?
Exactly. And if you are near an artificial light, you go past it, you turn to adjust, and you're trying to keep your back to it. So in like the slow motion video clips, they saw if they were starting to come over the top, they would then dive down below it. Mm-hmm. And so they think it is basically confusing them when they're trying to navigate, because mm-hmm. typically they would use the moon over evolutionary time. And we as humans just have this artificial light source, and it mixes them up.
And sometimes their better senses kick in. They're like on the ground. They're like, wait, that is not the moon. That thing is warm. But then they just can't get around it. Yeah, that is more or less the nuances that are well explained. So I appreciate that very much. Okay, so do you have a favorite bug around this here Wisconsin parts?
Ooh, Wisconsin or worldwide?
Because just favorite
different
bug.
Answer.
Favorite bug. Those gossamer winged things you're showing me. What are those things with the like beautiful window pane glass?
Oh, I mean, there's all sorts of insects with beautiful wings. But probably my all time favorite insect. And I love anything weird and obscure. Mm-hmm. But there's a creature called an ice crawler, which, despite having the frozen tundra, you mm-hmm. know, up at Lambeau Field, we don't have these in Wisconsin. Oh. You have to go out west to like permanent snowfields, glaciers. They're found from the western U.S. up through Canada, Alaska, over into parts of Siberia, Japan.
That's like taiga tundra lately, yeah.
Exactly. And these insects are very specialized. So I've spent time at sites where I know these occur. I have a colleague on campus, Dr. Sean Scoville, who's a world expert on this group of insects. And if you're up in the mountains, like Lawson Peak in California, there's always insects that are migrating over, getting blown in from the wind. Some of them die, and so they rain down onto mm-hmm. the snow. So there's food there. There's just dead insects. And so these ice crawlers mostly come out at night, and they scavenge on that
stuff. They want to bug snow cone.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're very specialized to these environments, and if you were to like pick them up in your hand, they'd die. It's too hot for them. So they just live like up on glaciers. They come out after dark.
Ice crawlers, that is some sci-fi business. I'm picturing like Jawas, you know, sand crawlers, but that's amazing. Okay, well, something to look up. I love being a biologist because it's just the best, weirdest things you learn all the time. You're like, well, this will never be important until you're starving in the taiga. You're like, wait, there's bugs that rain from the sky. I can make a paste and live in this cave, and I don't know. That's just my sci-fi brain. All right, one more question before we get to a song. What is popping up right now for native stuff? If the couple of things that are really hatching that we might enjoy, like where the monarchs at? I don't know. What's cool?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things come to mind. We're getting to the end of the season, but it has been a really good year for fireflies in the Lock area. And it likely has to do simply with some of the rainier conditions we're having this year, but also last year as well. If you go back 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we had some really dry, droughty periods. Mm-hmm. Not great for fireflies. Moisture is good. Now, I just got back from a long weekend in the Driftless area, driving through some of their valleys. Still lots of fireflies out there.
That's so magical with all the different. There's like four kinds?
Oh, no. We have in the state, I think, around 20 or so different species.
Oh, golly.
There's a lot more than that.
Gee willikers.
Yeah.
That's
lots
amazing.
Lots of them out there. There's also, in terms of monarchs, we don't really get our good assessment until the winter months, but based on some citizen science reports recently, seems like there are more reports this year. So that could potentially be some good news on that front.
That is because they are a special thing. On the West Coast, we don't have lightning. We don't have lightning bugs. It was weird out in Seattle. You just don't see the same thing. And people say, you're like, you say a bug glows with its butt. And it's just how, they know it. Then they try to do it like Kelvin from Kelvin and Hobbes, and no one can pull it off, and they don't really believe you. So because we love our friends from the South, the monarch butterfly, and because this was a very popular song when I was studying abroad in Costa Rica, we're going to listen to Mana. So get ready. Get your slow dance out, but don't listen to the lyrics because it'll make you want to leave your lover. But here we go.
I'm gonna take my easy chair.
Hey, what's up, y'all? We are back. We are enjoying our time together here in the studio, working on getting some songs up and about. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and, well, look up Mariposa Traicionera by Mana if you'd like to hear the hits. But we also have lots to talk about with my man PJ here. That's right, codename Cheese Beetle. He is my colleague, and once again, this is the Perpetual Notion Machine on WORT. We're bugging out with PG Leisch, and he works with University of Wisconsin Extensions. He stares at insects so you don't have to, and then he brings that knowledge to those of us that are less squinty, or maybe, you know, can't even. I've got the spectacles, so it's hard for me to even look through microscopes. For I see you peering. I walk into his offices, and he's just hunched over, you know, and there's this bubbling things, and there's lots of bugs on sticks, actually. I have a very important question, though. So what do you call, what's your other code name besides Cheese Beetle?
I mean, Wisconsin Bug Guy is pretty much what I go by.
On the Insta, right?
Yep.
So lay it out for us, though. Like, what is a bug? Because there's a certain kind of, you know, we use, and I'm kind of calling you out here, because in my mind, it's like a coleoptera. It's like a beetle, right? Like, technically, well, but lay it out for us. You're the mad scientist here. I'm just dabbling, you know?
So I mean, through my work, I interact a lot with the public, and you really have to know your audience when you're speaking to them. So the term bug can obviously mean quite a few different mm-hmm. things. Sometimes in conversation, folks might say, oh, I had the flu bug. Well, that's referring to, you know, a microbe, essentially. Oh, right. So that's one use. Sometimes folks use the term bug to refer to kind of anything creepy crawly, which mm-hmm. could include, you know, even spiders and stuff mm-hmm. like that for some folks. Now, to an entomologist, the word bug means something very specific. Mm-hmm. It's a group of insects called the order Hemiptera.
Oh, Hemiptera. I got it wrong, too.
These are creatures like box elder bugs, plant bugs, lace bugs, cicadas are in that general group. So if I'm talking to another entomologist and say bug, that's what we're really meaning. If I'm just interacting with the general public, I'm okay using bug to kind of mean insects in general.
So if, you know, John Q. Public said that a spider was a bug, that wouldn't necessarily bug you?
I'm not going to cringe okay. or shudder or anything like that.
Right.
I know where they're coming from.
It is kind of colloquially just means kind of insect, but yeah, it's interesting that like you can, or it means also like a type of car.
Yeah, yeah, there's that other context as well.
But that actually isn't land. It's a beetle. Sorry, it's a bug. That's fun. Awesome. Well, we tempted you before the break with some knowledge about. So, hey, everyone, Merry Hippie Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. Free couches for all. Ho, ho. Like some plates. Ho, ho, ho. That being said, maybe you don't want to haul the couch right into the house. Tell us a little bit about why it's the perfect. Now, not to freak you all out about these creepy crawlies, but be aware, friends. Just because you're not paranoid doesn't mean you won't get bed bugs. So tell us a bit about that terrible curse.
So bed bugs have an interesting story. If you go back hundreds and hundreds of years, we think they originated in caves in the Mediterranean. Mm. Folks started living there. They originally had been parasites of bats, and the insects must have figured, hey, these creatures don't fly away. Let's feed on humans. So there
is tasty mammals, got blood.
There is this host shift. Now, over time, with inventions like central heating, stuff like that, mm-hmm. they had been more of a seasonal issue. Now they can do fine year-round.
Like in New York all the time.
Yep. Once we got to World War II era, though, around then, with things like DDT, they were almost wiped out, like worldwide. So if you were an entomologist in the 60s or 70s, if you saw a bed bug, it was like, wow, what is this? I never see these. Fast forward to about the 1990s, early 2000s, with world global trade and mm-hmm. business travel and all that stuff, bed bugs start popping back up. And a reason for that is resistance to some of the insecticides. And DDT, which is no longer around, has been gone for about 50-ish years. Mm-hmm. Some of our modern insecticides work on insect nerves in almost the same exact way. And so those modern chemistries, the insect is resistant to those because it was resistant to DDT. So it's around. It has really popped back up and come roaring onto the scene in the last 20, 25 years or so. And it is a concern. And so with hippie Christmas going on, I remember being a graduate student and there's free furniture and, you know, get a computer chair, you find clothes and whatnot. But I do urge a little bit of caution. I mean, for items like clothing or small items like that, that can be laundered. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be washed. I mean, if you're finding clothes on the curb, you might just want to wash
it. You probably do.
But in theory, it's not the washing, it's the heat that kills them. So putting things in the dryer, clothing or shoes or something like that, just getting the heat up to above 120 essentially is what really kills them. So that's one thing. If it's smaller items, you know, books or things that are relatively small and can fit in a freezer, that would be one way you could put items in there, leave it for about 2 weeks. And even if there had been bed bugs, that would kill them.
2 weeks. Okay.
Yeah. It's a little bit harder though with large items like furniture. And so, you know, context is kind of important here. If you have a friend or someone else you know is moving out and they say, hey, I've got furniture, and you know that they don't have bed bugs, that's going to be very, very low risk.
Right.
If you just grab that random chair or couch off the sidewalk, it's not a very high chance it has bed bugs, but there's still a chance of that.
Non-zero.
And because they love to hide in nooks and crannies.
They're sneaky.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to check those. So I'd be very, very reluctant to take items like that.
I have a beautiful, like, you know, score from a family that brings out their ottoman right to the, you know, and they look like happy and healthy people. Not so bad. Get them from your friends and neighbors that don't have them. But do exercise caution because, you know, I live in an apartment complex and I don't want to do that to you. And gee howdy, what a mess that would be. I've seen it before in cities, or like you see the people pumping stuff in there and it's gnarly. So, you know, don't let the Grinch of bed bugs stop you from enjoying Hippie Christmas, though. Get that mug. Put it in the freezer for 2 weeks. No, I don't know. That's great advice, especially as we all are out there foraging. And may I all wish you the manifestation of the electronic of your dream from Hippie Christmas. That's my gift from me to you to get out there, dig it out. And also be respectful, you know, recycle things, do it right. It's a holiday, but they're cracking down. They're always trying to take our free stuff away. So we don't do it right, it'll just get more clandestine and draconian as we see. All right. So we are already getting close, but, I do have an important topic because, if you know me, you know, I'm a geek about this. So we're looking at the spotted lanternfly popping up right now, and it's a beautiful, kind of pink red bug, and it's hatching. And what can you tell us briefly about that?
Yeah. So there's an invasive insect called a spotted lanternfly. And first thing I want to say is it's not here in Wisconsin yet,
that we know
of, we want to be on the lookout for it. And the epicenter of that insect is really the mid-Atlantic states, places like Pennsylvania and so on. Very well established in that part of the country. It's been over the years making its way farther and farther west, closer to us. So Ohio, Indiana, places like
Illinois,
that.
Illinois, too.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just going to say the Chicago area, about 2 years ago, it did pop up there. So it's knocking on our door, so to speak. It's a relatively large insect as adults. They're about an inch long.
Okay.
The wings have this kind of pattern of dots and dashes. I tell folks Morse code when you think about it. But they've got some brilliant pink coloration on the body.
Kind of salmon almost, yeah.
And there's nothing else that looks quite like these. Mm-hmm. They're very distinctive. The reason they're a concern, though, is they can feed on a pretty wide range of plants. A lot of trees, like yard and street trees, they can feed on. And they're not going to kill the trees. They make it really messy, though.
They're suckers, right?
They are. They suck the sap out. They can't digest it. So their excrement is loaded with sugars. It makes a sticky mess. It gets mold growing on it and microbes. And you can get thousands of these on a given tree. And so folks are just going to have kind of that ick factor and not like these. But some plants, agriculturally speaking, like grapes, can get clobbered by these too.
Sure.
And so out east, some grape growers have had to do a lot more spraying of insecticides because of this insect. So there's going to be some challenges there. So we really want to know as quickly as we can if it's present. That gives us the chance in the state to respond quickly and potentially knock it out for a little bit while longer.
Perfect. Yeah, and we do want to remind you to stay calm if you see these things, but we want you to get out your picture. You could become almost as cool as PJ if you could report this to us. And it's a big deal because it might impact our orchards, our hops production, which means beer. That's right, beer. And our grape, our vintners and other, and even our landscape plants. So if you see a big pile of what they call a smut, like sooty smut, and that's molding by a tree, that's a good sign. They're often on the tree of heaven. So take a picture, and you can go to slf.wi.gov. And that is the best way to report an instance, and they're right at our doorstep. So don't panic. Don't spray things unnecessarily. You might do more damage than you want. If you want to stomp them, that's fine. But let us know. Get a live shot. Get TikTok famous. Well, that's awesome, man. This always goes way too fast. So thank you so much for coming in. This has been really fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
So this is PJ Leisch, aka the Wisconsin Bug Guy, the director over at the Extensions. He's our expert that we go to. Codenamed Cheese Beetle. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
All right, guys, you've been listening to The Perpetual Notion Machine, hatching science stories every Thursday from 7 to 7:30 on 89.9 WORTFM Madison, Wisconsin. I'm your monthly mad scientist host, Wally. So keep learning about all those shiny beetles, and maybe someday you can be the Wisconsin bug person or whatever. And thank you to all those science teachers out there. Have a nice night. And with that, up next, we're going to play a little of my favorite band, if we can, from when I was in eighth grade at the forum. So
can you hear me now?
This highway, all these cars end up on the sidewalk, people in every direction, no words exchange, no time to exchange you and I. Sit on my way.